I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Nothing Concrete, the Barbican podcast. I'm Ben Eshmade, and on this week's archive edition, we grab some popcorn and speak to actors Maxine Peake and Tony Pitts about their 2017 cinema collaboration. In this, Maxine Peake plays Funny Cow, a woman who wants to make people laugh, someone who refuses to give up on her dreams.
If this does get made and I get to play the part, then I could happily retire. You know, it's a dream role.
I've never said to anybody, I'm going to write for you. Until that point, I'd never had, I'd felt that urge at all, but I did within minutes of sitting next to her, and anyone wanted to write for her.
In Funny Cow, Tony Pitts is the writer, Adrian Shergold directs, and Maxine Peake stars. The film is the fictional tale of a woman who dreams of making people laugh in the unforgiving northern comedy circuit of the 70s and 80s. Alongside Maxine, the cast includes Tony Pitts as her husband, Paddy Considine as her boyfriend, Alan Armstrong as a tragic comedian and her mentor, and Lindsay Coulson as Funny Cow's bitter mum.
Good evening. How very nice it is to be here this evening. But then again, I'm from Rotherham, so it's nice to be anywhere.
One of the UK's most well-respected actors, Maxine Peake, has appeared in TV roles such as Dinner Ladies, Silk, Shameless and Black Mirror, and her theatre work includes Shakespeare's Hamlet. Around the time of the film release, I met up with Tony and Maxine to discuss this very personal project and film. Maxine takes me back a decade to where she and Tony met, and this particular project began.
Well, yeah, Tony and myself were working on the Red Riding trilogy in 1980 with Paddy Considine as well, who's in the film, and we all sort of started a friendship then, didn't we, really?
Yeah, the kind of friendship.
The kind of friendship, yeah.
Personal resentment.
But yeah, I think that's a basis for all the best friendships.
Yeah, we did.
And Tony came up to me and said, I'd like to write something for you. Have you got any ideas? What have you got a burning desire to do? And I'd said, well, I'd always had sort of this idea in the back of my mind about a woman rising through the ranks in the working men's club circuit. And Tony said, I know that world. I used to run comedy clubs, and I've sort of cited Marty Caine as somebody I was a big fan of and was an influence. And so Tony sort of went, right, great, thanks, went off and came back about 2 weeks later with this amazing script.
Had you written much before that?
I've always written. In the wilderness years when I was as a boy actor, I was in Emmerdale, and then I couldn't get arrested for about 6 or 7 years. And so my days were spent writing endless plays and scripts and poetry, and with the intention of showing it anyone, really. Yeah, I've always written, and then I write a lot for radio. Radio 4. Then I've written for TV. So no, this is my first film.
And Maxine, from your point of view, what's it like when someone writes for you? I mean, that's a pretty amazing compliment.
It was extraordinary, and I always remember saying to Tony, as you know, over the years, I mean, it's taken us since then to get this film made, and all credit to our wonderful producer, Kevin Proctor, who really
wouldn't
struggled.
Say no for an answer,
wouldn't say no for an answer. But yeah, I always used to say, didn't you, if this does get made and I get to play the part, then I could happily retire. You know, it's a dream role, really. Yeah, so Tony's hoping I will retire now, and probably not the only one out there. But
there's a chorus.
There's a chorus of disapproval.
Yeah, right.
Saying, yeah, that's thank enough. God for that. That is about time.
Sit down.
But yeah, and the thing with Tony is, he writes it, but all the time we're having conversations and he's asking me. Sometimes I think, why is he asking me this? And he'll start asking me about stuff and I'll be jabbering around.
What would he ask you?
Well, I remember he was sort of asking me about, you know, because I'd sort of said one of the reasons as well, I wanted to explore what it was like for a woman in that period. But I'd always really, deep down, my burning ambition, which I couldn't quite admit to, was to be a comic. I wanted to be a stand-up. When I was from sort of 9, 10, that's what I wanted to do, because a friend of mine, Vicky, said, you know what you should be? You should be a comic. And I was telling Tony this, and then there's a speech, yeah, that's in there. So he just take those, because he knew that would resonate with me.
I want to do what you do.
Why?
Yeah, I saw you at club at Crooks Club.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. I want to do what you do. I want to make people laugh.
I won't bother. Waste of time.
Why'd you say that? It isn't. I'm funny.
Oh, yeah, love. That's good.
I am.
I doubt it. It's not a job for a woman. Why do you think all comics are blokes, love? I'll tell you why. Because women aren't funny. Don't know why, but they're just not.
You're not funny.
No.
And Tony, were there many women comedians coming through that circuit?
No, they were very... I mean, there has always been female comedians, going back to the music halls and wartime, but they are noticeable by the, because there's the rarity. There'd be two or three. I mean, at that time, I remember Marty, I remember Faith Brown, I remember Janet Brown, but they were a very small community of women that performed. So, no, I didn't do research, because I wasn't really writing from that point of view. I was writing from the point of view of my instinctual understanding of Maxine as a human being, I think was more what I thought I could see in her that I could see in myself. So, yeah, it's, I'm sure it's not an original thought. So films are two things, aren't they? There's a story of the film and then there's actually what the film's about. And what the film's actually about, I think Maxine and I share quite a deep level, is of being cuckoos, really, of being never quite belonging to any, or over-investing and think, oh, these are my people, I belong with this lot, and then thinking, actually, I kind of don't, really. So that's what guided most of it. Most of it was, I think Maxine's very vivid to me as a human being. I could see her. I've never said to anybody, I'm going to write for you. I'd never, until that point, I'd felt that urge at all, but I did within minutes of sitting next to her, and I wanted to write for her.
Maxine, this might be a jump, but it's interesting the comedian sort of hardening herself, sort of defending herself and the armour. That reminds me of Shakespeare, which obviously you've done a lot of, that idea of dehumanising of masculinity and femininity.
Yeah, and... yeah, it was really interesting because probably about maybe about 4 years ago, we filmed a little sort of vignette for the film. It was Tony directed it, and it was obviously to put out, try and get funding, but it was well to give us a bit of a dry run to see, you know, how we'd get on. And we went to the Comedy Store in London for the day, and I did some material that Tony had written. And at the end of it, Tony went, oh God, you went really masculine, didn't you? You went really hard, quite aggressive on the front foot. I felt this sort of. So it is that, but it's about putting armour. And then sometimes it is interesting because you think, oh, masculine, what does that mean if a woman becomes hard? Does she become masculine? I don't quite like that terminology because I don't... Masculine and feminine, what does... If a man's feminine, what is it? What it shouldn't... They shouldn't belong to... something is not just... belongs to one gender. But unfortunately, we're in a world that, you know... So it was about, but how she has to survive. It is, you have to be, it's that being one of the lads, isn't it, I suppose?
Well, and nothing's then, any, sorry, sir, nothing's, no, no, nothing's any one thing, is it? That's the thing, it's nonsense. Things are complicated. You know, you were given templates as children, you were given templates of masculinity and femininity. The decades that we cover, those lines were very clear. And the template for masculinity was very narrow, as was the template for femininity. And you don't have to have much of a personality to be considered difficult or any amount of names.
I'm Angus. This is my bookshop, sir.
How do, Angus?
So what do you like?
Like?
To read. What do you like to read?
Oh, I'm a seeker after knowledge, me.
That's good. Mm. Like that.
I've only just started mine, Summer. I'm a new seeker.
Well, I'm an ardent champion of the new seeker, so...
Oh, that's good.
Would you like to go out for a drink?
Oh, no.
That's interesting in the film because obviously the sort of the hardships and the violence that the Funny Cow experiences with her with her husband and you know with other people that's about putting her in her lane, isn't it? I suppose.
Yeah, well, it is, and that's the fear, isn't it? Mm. People are frightened of her because they know she wants to break out and she's not playing to the rules. Mm. So she, you know, it's about sort of panel beating her into submission. It's about you will know your place, and because she's a threat. She's posed as a threat, and that's what happens in those situations, those relationships. And it is as much about her sort of emancipation as well as it is about what the problems within society and those cultural, the timer it's set for the men as well. It's about
the men are fearful too. Yeah. So the husband's acting out of fear. He's trying to bash her compliant because he's fearful of losing. The two driving forces are fear and love, and. He's trying to beat her complaint. He's trying to beat because he knows that she's. And when she says, "I'm not going to take it anymore," he's drunk himself to a standstill.
It's interesting because the humour in this film doesn't come from always the obvious places. Yeah. I want to talk about Alan Armstrong as Lenny, who is just amazing.
Well, there were two. So it's essentially a film with friends. I think just about everybody you see on screen are friends of Maxine and mine, and the only two that weren't known to us. But I didn't know Alan, and I didn't know Lindsay Coulson, who plays Funny Cow's mum later on. And I think both of them were a real revelation to me. Extraordinary, I think, performances from both of them.
All know Alan isn't, an amazing, not just screen actor, but classical actor, And Lindsay, I remember when she was... Even in EastEnders, everyone used to say she's got something really special. She really has. She's got humanity and a rawness and a depth. Just as well, she was amazing, but a fantastic human being she is to boot. So it was a bit of an honour. And when you get to meet those people on jobs, because it was friends, and it's great, but then it's always nice as well when you make a new friend and hopefully that's Lindsay.
With Lindsay, I'd say just for film fans, if people who go and see the film, if you watch the scene at the end, there's a sort of reconciliation between her and her mum, or at least an acknowledgement of each other. And it's a tearful scene, a heaving, sobbing scene. And watching it back, I only realised on the second viewing that actually she hadn't actually written the words that I'd said. She'd just made the sounds of those words.
Really?
It's extraordinary. If you watch it, it's absolutely extraordinary, yeah.
What's his name?
Don't matter. Bob. It's Bob.
And you and Bob, do you get on? Does he make you laugh?
Oh, aye. He's hysterical.
You're being sarcastic, right? Do you love him?
No, of course not.
Does he?
What? Not me about. Yeah, he does. Happy now.
Why on earth would I be happy to hear that?
Well, you can be my rescuer, can't you? Play at Shining Knights. I'm a damsel in distress. Anyway, don't matter.
Who took your self-esteem from you? You have very low self-esteem.
Nobody took it. I handed it over of my own volition.
I'm going to admit something now, and you can look at me in shock, but I've never been in a working man's club. Not shock. Right, no, that's an exaggeration.
Not
exaggeration.
With that
Jesus Christ. You
but what's interesting from my point of view is that I've only ever seen it on screen. So I'm interested to ask you, what's it actually like? I mean...
Like that?
Yeah.
It's like that. I think we've talked a lot about it for both of us, that... There was a glamour as a child, Maxine in Manchester, me in Sheffield, industrial cities, work a day, and then on Saturday night, I remember the doors opening on our street and couples coming out dressed up to go to the workmen's club, and they'd come home full of beer and giddy and tell me about what the turns he'd seen. And it seemed to me as a young child, like a cathedral almost, like an impossibly glamorous place. And then, and I think because we use those places that we used in the film, the locations are actually still functioning, working man's clubs, so not much set dressing needed. The pervading atmosphere is captured in there. That's as I remember it. Maxine on stage, it's a bear pit.
Yeah, no, definitely. And we were very lucky because we had the best bunch of sporting artists on that job.
No, incredible.
Who were so committed, you know, and really went for it. You know, and if you've got to sit there all day and watch somebody do the same act over and over again, and the support, and they knew it was hard for me, it's the first time I'd done it, and they were just behind me, you know, they were so important in that film throughout. They were so sort of dedicated.
Yeah, I had a lot of them were my I had a lot of family members or lads from the gyms that I used to know, and as a writer and watching Maxine up there, I had a real sense of the, because Maxine has got that thing that good comedians have, because it's walking on to love. The great ones walk on to love, and the great ones actually don't care. And Maxine's got a little bit of both of that. Those things in her, and the support that she got was, fabulous.
We don't always see the audience, though. That's quite interesting in this film.
Yeah, I mean, the first, you know, in the opening of the film, there was no audience. When it's the latter sort of stand-up, when she's achieved her fame, you know, there was nobody in there. And that was the hardest, actually, because there was no audience. There was no feedback, and I find that quite difficult. And I remember because scheduling and one of the actors' availabilities, they sort of went, sorry, but we're going to have to do that right at the beginning of the shoot now. And I was like, I'm not ready, I need to warm up.
And it was five times longer than, I mean, I wrote.
You kept rewriting it, rewriting it.
I rewrote huge amounts of the actual comedy routine that Maxine did was something like 8 pages, wasn't it?
And said, please don't send me any more. I mean, I suppose the beauty with, I did say to Tony, look, I know that, so what you do with the beauty of it, and to make it your own, is go, you know the joke, you know the story of the joke, you know the punchline. So I didn't learn it word for word. I just went, this is the joke, and then you just need to know.
If you know the punch.
So that made it a lot easier.
You can have a wander around until you get land on the punchline. That's what the great ones do. Know where your punchline is, and then you can wander around, and then any time you want to drop it, bang it, and then you...
Could you talk a little bit about the structure of the film? I mean, obviously that's relevant to you. That's great. I mean, that's what I really enjoyed about the film. Yeah. It never went where exactly I was expecting.
It was because at first people went, oh, it jumps all over the place, you know, when they read the script. I'm like, that's brilliant. Do you remember Piaf? Yeah. That sort of went, didn't it? It had that beautiful... And that's what I loved about it. That's why it makes it like you know, it's like some epic poem, because it does... Mm. You don't need... Why does everything have to be told... A to B.
Yeah.
But we must admit, Adrian Shergold, we've got to mention, who's the fabulous director of the film, did...
Beyond fabulous. He then did film
it as, you know, we shot it, and then he did he made a movement with it, didn't he? Where he needed to move stuff,
he moved it. I think tradition hinders progress, and I didn't feel burdened by a need to... I felt unburdened by a need to do a linear narrative. I don't think that's... I just wrote what I felt as I felt it, and then sort of handed it over to Adrian and said,
It's a series of experiences, isn't it?
Yeah. Formative moments.
If it was linear, then it would just be, it just end up being another film about somebody's, and you think, we've seen it, but the way it is, it's something...
And everything I write, I'm afraid, does tend to be a little bit like that.
Hey, now, have any of you read any of them Lonely Arts adverts in paper? Lying bastards, aren't they? Curvy?
Fat twat.
Cuddly? Fatter twat.
Thanks to Maxine and Tony for speaking to me. With Funny Cow, they've created a compelling exploration of our need to love and laugh. Much recommended. I'm Ben Eshmade. Thanks for listening to this archive edition of Nothing Concrete, the Barbican podcast. It's here to inspire more people to discover and love the arts, with weekly episodes of archive finds and themed series. Subscribe to Nothing Concrete on Acast, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. And if you can, leave us a review to help us get the word out.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.